Welcome to the One Board Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Gutowski, and joining me for the first time this season is my buddy, Bob. Bob, who writes for us and is, of course, everyone knows, the heir to the Milton Bradley fortune. Bob, how are you doing today?
How you doing, Ryan? I'm doing good, man.
Good, good.
The Milton Bradley fortune, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're like the third cousin of Milton.
Yeah.
Mr. Milton
it's,
and
it's
Mr. Bradley.
It's actually second cousin,
okay.
But, you know, semantics.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, yeah. Who cares?
All I know is I'm getting a lot of money.
That's right. You're going to rake in those sweet, sweet big box board game bucks.
Yeah, it's all going to board games, too. Yeah. I would love to own a board game company. I don't know about you.
There we go. Well, if anybody out there selling, Bob is buying.
So. I am interested. I am buying.
So, cool.
Not too overpriced, though.
That's true.
I got like $15.
So. I'm sure they'll buy a nice small board game company.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So, Bob, this is the first time you've come on the show in this season, and actually the first time since you've been a contributor. So, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. You've been writing with us since the summer, in July, I think you started. And so, Bob,
I don't remember.
I think
June,
middle of the summer, somewhere.
July, something like that. Well, I don't know how to talk about myself. I don't know what to say. I am a board game. I consider myself a board game connoisseur.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
I guess that I just made up.
Yeah,
yeah, sure. I just buy a lot of board games, and I play an inordinate amount
of board games.
Like I think I sat down one day because I was bored, and I actually ran the numbers. It's pretty not good. Like, I should probably be devoting... you know, I should probably do, like, inventing something or, you know, like, trying to help somebody do something. But nope, I'm rolling dice.
Even Nikola Tesla had his, his addictions.
I love board games so much that you invited me to share some of my knowledge.
Yeah.
And I've been enjoying, surprisingly, I never really considered myself a writer. And you gave me or offered me the opportunity to do this, and I just kind of opened up and started talking.
It's really good. So I really enjoy your reviews, man. And I think what you bring to the table is just a lot of knowledge of board games because you play so many of them. I think Rick and I and Aaron have a lot more of a, like, so some of the games that we play are a little more mainstream, but I mean, you play everything from something weird and obscure to a 7-hour board game to a quick filler that everybody knows of, you know. So
I play it all if I see it, and being part of a group in town here that has access to so many different games, you know, I see a lot get to the table that maybe I'm not involved in at first, but I might come in and say, okay, what is this, why am I not playing it, and when are you going to play it next?
Yeah, you know.
So then a lot of times when I do that, I get to play. I end up buying the game myself. So,
and that's why you have a giant board game collection.
And that's exactly why I have a giant board game collection. Yeah,
it's like Pokemon. You gotta catch them all.
You gotta get them all, man. You gotta catch them all.
Cool, man. Well, we in the beginning of the show we talk a little about the games that we've been playing, and actually, I got to play Role Player last night. This was an interesting yesterday afternoon. So I went to my in-laws' house, hanging out with them and celebrating some birthdays of some nieces and nephews. And so I brought Role Player just as a, you know what? I've been wanting to play Role Player for almost a month now and haven't gotten to the table. And I was like, maybe Aaron and I can carve some time out and me and her can play Role Player together. Or even me and Josiah, because he's played before. Josiah's our 13-year-old son. And so I brought it. I'm playing a board game with you know, some family members. And we're sitting around having a good time, a very casual game. And then Aaron brings in Role Player. And she's like, we could play this next. I immediately was like, yes, we need to play this next. But then I forgot my audience. My audience was my mother-in-law, which she really enjoys board games. And then my future sister-in-law, who she enjoys board games. But this game is significantly more heavy than some of the other stuff that I've introduced to the family. So we start playing Role Player. And man, it was like diving into the deep end for everybody, you know?
Oh, I bet.
So it was hard because I think there's so much math and so much planning involved in Role Player. You can't just roll dice and just be like, whatever, I'll take that. You really have to plot and plan, and each turn takes some analysis, you know? And so we end up playing, but we got it done. Probably took an hour and 30, hour and 40 minutes. Everybody hung in there, and actually everybody had a great time at the end of the night, at the end of the day. So even though it took a while, we got through a full game of Role Player with people who don't normally play games like that. So it was really good.
So did they actually enjoyed it?
They really did. So my mother-in-law beat me. I scored all of 13 points because I can't use this excuse. I was teaching. That's why I wasn't paying attention to my character. I just legitimately lost. Like, I did not plan well, and I missed a lot of like little cues to get certain points. And my mother-in-law did really, really well. She collected a lot of really good traits that kind of added bonuses to her dice, and did really well for herself. And so we had a really fun time. It was the first time I think I've played Role Player at 4-person count.
Nice.
And teaching two other people who are casual gamers how to play.
Right.
So
Yeah, that's tough. And I was going to ask you about that when you initially mentioned it. I was like, oh man, Role Player, like, is that the right audience? Like,
well, that's,
are you gonna scare people away?
I think my excitement to play the game overrode my like ability to say no. This is it. And truthfully, my mother-in-law jumped in last minute.
Like, I don't care.
Yeah,
we're playing this anyway.
My mother-in-law jumped in. We were about to roll the first hand, and she said, "What are you guys playing?" And Aaron goes, "Hey, come on, come play." And I was like, oh no, how bad is this going to be? But she got it. Everybody had to analyze and really think about their turn, but we got through it, and it was actually a lot of fun.
That
we had a good time.
Surprises me.
It surprised me at the end of the time too. I thought everybody would be like, oh, this was a disaster, but no, it was good.
That and like thematically, like, you're essentially, you're building a character sheet, right?
Yeah, basically.
I've never played Role Player, and that's because of you.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, because I have not shared that amazingness.
Yeah, you have not shared. Yeah. I know. You're the only one that I know that actually has Role Player and is willing to play it and knows how to play it.
Well,
but
then
you haven't taught
me. We have to fix that this week. So,
from what I know of the game, you're rolling dice and you're essentially placing them to build a character sheet for a dungeon crawl or that kind of fantasy theme, right?
Yep. And so,
okay, and that theme resonated with everyone.
Yeah, wow. Which was surprising. And the girl that my brother-in-law is dating, she sat down. She was like, okay, I'll just be the human because it's fine. I don't care. Hmm. And she was fine with it. But once she got into the stats of things, she was like, oh, I see. I need to do this. I need to bring this number up. I need to bring this number down. I can miss this point and still be okay. So I think everybody got it. My mother-in-law went heavy on the cards. And so her traits, there were a lot of combos she got, and she really enjoyed it herself. So
That's awesome, man.
I really thought it would be a disaster, but it worked out really well. But honestly, I would not show this to other casual gamers. Because
it's not really a casual game.
It's not. It's not.
It's not.
And so,
and I'm glad that went well. Yeah. You know, because that can, I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Just being able to pick the right game for the right crowd is a thing, because you can scare people away very easily. Like, hey, let's play this game. And sit down, and they're completely confused, and they don't know what's going on, and you're trying to force them, like, no, you will like this game.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And that can turn people off, but if you read them correctly and choose the right game, thematically and mechanically, you can kind of, steer them
yeah.
in a way where that slowly develops into a love for further board gaming,
yeah,
to learn
right.
more and more. But to start a casual gamer in something like that, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out, though.
So, yeah, right?
So, Bob, what is you've obviously played a bunch of games probably over the past couple of days or week. What's one game that kind of stuck out to you?
Something that we've been playing lately that kind of sticks out to me is actually a new engine builder that I just got my hands on. I think it came out probably I think it was Origins, actually. Gizmos? I think you played
yeah.
it with me like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, actually, we talked about it on the show last week, actually. So Rick
oh,
and
oh.
I were talking because we played it at Origins. It came out at Gen Con, but
at Gen Con.
But we played the prototype, and man, I'm just so satisfied with how that game felt. So what is your take? Because you're actually writing the review for Gizmos. What's your take
yes,
on the game?
I will be writing. It is a very nice, thinky engine builder. I don't want to say that it's overly complicated, but it's not on the level of like it's sort of same mechanic wise as Splendor, but like a couple levels up.
Okay.
So it's got that same feel of reserving cards and picking things to turn them in to buy cards off the table. But there's a lot of iconography
mm-hmm.
that goes on in this game, and you're making chain reactions on your board that'll help you get more things to spend to get things off the table.
Yeah.
It's essentially an engine builder to 16 cards or gizmos, they call them. So you're building these gizmos, which are on these cards, and those gizmos that you build and acquire go in your tableau and perform different bonuses for when you take certain functions in the game. You can make some really nice chain reaction stuff off of these cards that can get you really far ahead in the game.
Since you've played the game multiple times with different groups of people, do you feel like the iconography is a barrier to entry? Because I think that's one of the things that was a miss for me. Like, it uses icons throughout the whole thing, but I think some of them could get confusing. Obviously, to you who owns the game and has played the game multiple times, you know what each one does. But the new person who just steps in, do you feel like you have to explain it a lot?
I feel like there's one or two things that maybe could have been worded slightly differently stop a little bit of confusion, like with the filing and the archiving. The symbols kind of get confused for people who haven't played the game. But I don't think it's a barrier to keep any entry-level players from playing this.
Okay.
I think a couple rounds in, they get the flow, and I remind them. I say, "Hey, remember this is this." You know, a couple of times it happens, like, "Oh yeah, that's right." And I know I try to keep reminding players, like, "Hey, look at your tableau down there. Your four actions are on the board, and you know, just every time you run that action, read what it does, and then look at your bonuses underneath of that." But you know, if they had maybe tacked on a little section for archiving and on the end of the board, that may have helped newer players. But like I said, I don't think it's that much. It's not that big of a deal to keep to keep entry level players out of the game.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, Gizmos is definitely one I want to hear the final review. I'm looking forward to that, and I think people should stay tuned to oneboardfamily.com to find more coverage on that one. So, Bob, we actually have an interview right now with Aaron Dean. Aaron is the social media manager for Lucky Duck Games, and she has Lucky Duck. We love those
guys. I love Lucky Duck.
They're so good. She actually has some cool announcements in the next segment and a project she's going to be working on, which is a pretty big deal for gamers. So stay tuned for that interview after this break. I'm here with Aaron Dean. How are you doing today, Aaron?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Aaron, you were actually a guest judge on Will It Game, which is a podcast that my buddy Rick and I run, part of the same channel. But Aaron, you actually involve yourself in the board game community in a lot of ways. Why don't you tell our listeners how you're involved?
Yeah, so I'm the author of For the Love of Board Games. It's a book for board gamers that explores how modern popular board games were created by interviewing the designers behind the games. That's on Kickstarter right now, and it's coming to a close, so if you want to go check that out, that would be awesome. I am a part-time social media manager for Lucky Duck Games, the publisher behind Vikings Gone Wild, Chronicles of Crime, Jetpack Joyride, to name a few. And yeah, I'm just really, really trying to get involved in the community that is the board game community. And yeah, I have a big announcement that I'm so excited to share with your listeners.
Yeah. So you announced just recently that you are spearheading the National Board Game Museum. So for our listeners, like, what does that mean? Like, what's the scope of this project? Because I think when I think of museum, I'm like, wow, where do you even start with this?
Oh my gosh, there's so many steps to take to create something like this project. But basically, we just started a couple months ago. We've developed our mission statement. We've been forming our board of directors. We've filed for incorporation. A lot of different filing tasks we've been doing, but it's going to be a marathon. It's not going to be a sprint, but eventually there will be a physical location for the museum. And yeah, it's going to be a museum that totally focuses solely on board games. There's other museums in the United States that have board game exhibits, one being the Strong Museum, which is the National Museum of Play up in Rochester. I believe it's New York. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be a museum that totally focuses on board games, and it's going to celebrate that hobby.
That's really cool. So being such a huge project and this being a marathon, like, where do you start? I guess you yourself and the board of directors, where are you guys starting to make this a reality?
Well, I think that starts out with the actual fundraising. So very, very soon we're going to be kind of forming our fundraising campaign and really starting to get the project off the ground. We are, you know, recruiting a few more board members, but we're almost done with that process. And then we can really start to delegate some tasks and really, really hit this project full force.
That's awesome. Do you guys have an idea of what part of the country this would go best, or I guess a perfect scenario where this board game National Board Game Museum would exist?
It's going to be in the Midwest region. We haven't officially announced where, but definitely stay tuned for that. But it will be in the Midwest.
Excellent. Excellent. So as far as history and board games, how far back are you going? And I guess for the exhibits and things like that, how are you going about collecting these different, I guess, in some cases, artifacts?
Yeah, so we haven't actually started building our collection yet. I think we're going to really benefit from the community donating a lot of games to us to, you know, kickstart our collection and really build it up. And there's going to be a, you know, streamlined process for that. But yeah, it's going to be great. I want to be the museum that has the most board games in the United States. Right now, that is the Strong Museum. And so we're, you know, we're taking it step by step, like I said, and soon we will start building our collection.
That's really cool. Where, I guess, where did this start? Like, where was this idea birthed along your journey? You know, you're a community manager. You are involved in the board game industry from not only the PR side, but also running a podcast and writing a book. So how along that journey, where did this come about?
Yeah, so I'm always thinking of new ideas, and I was kind of, you know, tossing around the idea of there should be a professional network of, you know, marketers in the board game community where people, you know, have memberships and whatnot. And then that led to, I wonder if there's an actual museum for board games. So I did a little research, and there's no museum in the United States that totally focuses on board games. And I was like, yeah, I have to do this. It just, it was a feeling in my stomach where it's like, I can't not do this.
That's really cool. What excites you the most about this project as you look toward the future? Because this is obviously not going to just be something that's going to be the next couple of years for you. This is going to be a life journey for you, in fact.
Yeah, so board games are constantly evolving and using new mechanics and using new themes, and we're going to chronicle that. We're going to showcase not only the classics, but modern history as well. And we're going to follow that history to the best of our, you know, ability. And I'm really excited to see where the future goes with this hobby, and I'm so excited to celebrate it with this museum.
That's really cool. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for sharing your idea for this museum. Can you tell our listeners where they can go to kind of get filled in and stay up to date as you guys make these announcements?
Yes. The best way to do that is to join our mailing list, which you can learn all about our museum and join our mailing list at our website, boardgamemuseum.org. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and our social media handle is Museum4Games, F-O-R.
That's excellent. We're going to be really interested to see how this evolves and what comes of this over the coming months and years. This is really exciting and something that we look forward to seeing in physical form. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're back. Bob, I got to pose a question to you, man. Let's say you go to the store and you haven't done your research, but you see that game and it's on sale. It's like got that little sticker. It's like half off or 20% off or maybe just 5% off. I think we're all weak-willed people around here at One Board Family. Yeah,
any percent off.
1.5% off.
Crap. 1.5% off. Like I'm saving money.
This. Yeah, I have to own this. Anyway, what happens when you purchase that game, may have been on sale, but you come home to find out you bought a bummer? Like that game just isn't good. What do you do? So that's the question, Bob. Question of the show.
Are we pointing fingers? Are we naming names?
not necessarily. So I'll tell you what made me think about this topic. So this past weekend, okay, I went to Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble has a lot of stuff right now. If you're hearing this on the day of the release of this podcast, you may want to check out your local Barnes & Noble. There's tons of games that are 50% off right now. And you might have to sort through some garbage to find something good. But I picked up, it was choice between two games, and I was like, you know what, I'll pick this game over this game. I went ahead and bought it, and I get home, and as I'm unwrapping it, I said, let me look up some reviews. And I knew that was a bad idea. I started looking up reviews, man. And people were like, oh, this game's super light, oh, it's not very good, I like this.
Well, super light's not bad.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those games where it didn't do anything amazing, but it was still an okay game. And so, and that's what I found. And I said, I hope this doesn't taint my playthrough of the game. And so I ended up playing the game with my daughter and my brother-in-law's girlfriend. And then I played the game again with another daughter and brother-in-law's girlfriend. And we had a really good time with it. It was a light game, but it was really fun. Like, we really enjoyed ourselves. But I thought, what if this was a bummer? What if I ended up, like, sitting there and saying, this is terrible? I just spent $14.
It's all about
bucks.
Personal experience, too. You know what I mean? So reviews do help a lot. But it's also, so people will read the review movies, you know? Yeah. I'd like to say, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway. Because I'm going to see it anyway because my buddy that I trust said something different than everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have the same opinion of things, you know? So it's all about everybody's personal experience. So even a game that doesn't get that great reviews, mm-hmm, it may be your favorite game of all time after the first time you play it. You never know.
Yeah.
But on the off chance that you do go ahead and spend that money because you cannot resist the discount.
That's true.
We've all been there. And it does turn out to be a bummer of a game. I don't know. I mean, a lot of times it'll sit on my shelf for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sit there. I won't play it. I'll try to, if I can, when I go to sell, mm-hmm. I'll try to package it and make it look like it's cool.
Okay.
So I'm like, you know, hey, buy this game off me that everybody wants.
Yeah.
For 80% of its original value, and I'll throw in this other game that I played only once.
You gotcha. Know what
I
mean?
It's kind of like I scooted in with a package.
Yeah, yeah.
And try to take some. I count it as a loss.
Yeah.
So it kind of is an enticing deal for other games, or sometimes depending on the cost, I'll actually just raid the game mm-hmm. of pieces.
That makes sense. Yeah,
I've done that as well.
Yeah.
I have a giant box in my game room
yeah.
of pieces that have been just emptied and taken, dismantled out of boxes and just stored in this giant box.
That's pretty cool.
So anytime I need a meeple or a marble or a die or some kind of board game piece, even tiles, it's there.
Yeah.
You know? If I ever need a replacement,
that's actually a good idea, because if you didn't spend a ton of money on it, like that's you're still getting some value from a game that you may not have connected with.
Yeah. And if I ever need to MacGyver any, am I showing my age here? If I ever need to MacGyver any pieces to a game, I'm like, oh, I lost this piece. I can't believe it. How will I ever get it? Oh, let me check the box and see if there's something similar. I can maybe cut a tile or I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that makes complete sense. I've never even thought about that. I think that when I buy a bummer of a board game, and it's happened a couple times, where I purchased it and didn't connect with it, or for some reason the community that I game with didn't connect with it. Like, probably one of my biggest bummer board games is probably Spyfall, and I've talked about it on the show before.
Mm.
I really like Spyfall, but I've tried playing it 3 different times, and no one enjoys it with me.
I actually like Spyfall.
Oh, man, I just need more friends like you.
There's only one bummer part that I don't like about Spyfall. It's that there's only one map.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
So if you're not sitting at a table that's 2 feet by 2 feet...
Yeah.
Then the first time someone looks at the map, says, hey, can I see that map? I'm like, why'd you look at the map?
Yeah, yeah.
Why, the map's down here. Why do you want me to pass you the map? You're the spy. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's true, yeah.
So if everybody got a copy of the map and it was right in front of them, then people could just kind of like peek down at it real quick. You know what I mean? So that was my biggest gripe with Spyfall. But I still like it. I like social deduction. So.
Yeah, it's still a good game, you know? But I feel I've got it for sale right now on just like some local sites and stuff, you know, for a couple bucks. And it's sad because I like the game. It was fun. I enjoy aspects of the game, but to me, I just couldn't find the community to play. And so it just sits on my shelf as this.
Yeah. And that happens.
$15 staring back at me. Yeah. You get it on sale, but was it worth it? You know?
Yeah. That comes into play a lot too, you know, like with bigger board games. I'm like, man, I'm going to buy this game. It takes 3.5-4 hours to play, but I want it. But who am I ever going to play it with?
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that comes into play.
I think a lot of my bummer board games, I feel like I let it sit on my shelf for long enough that I know for a fact I'll never pick it up again. And then I end up selling it for
a week. Is there a time limit for you?
I think that, I think so. Because I think I'll let it sit there for 6 months or so. You know?
6 months?
I don't think I've ever sold a board game quicker than 6 months. Like, from the time I got it to the time I got rid of it. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there a time limit for you?
It's probably closer to a year.
Okay.
I feel like I'm an annual cleaner outer.
Yeah, that's true.
And then when I need shelf space.
Yeah.
Like right now, I either need to sell games or buy another shelf.
Or move.
Because I have I have like 20 boxes sitting on the ground in front of a shelf in my board game room.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's sad times. So.
I know. I mean, I'm trying to think, man. I'm running out of shelf space. I don't know how I'm going to get another shelf in here. But I'll figure it out. My wife is good at Tetris, so.
I think you have a bigger problem than bummer board games. So.
It's funny you said that, too, because I literally went to – we have a store here, a thrift store here in town called Ollie's. And I bought – I think I spent $35.
Yep.
I got 8 board games.
And I saw your picture, so that that actually – that ties into the show's topic.
I have no idea what any of them are.
Yeah.
And actually, one of them is not even a board game. It is a display box of board games. Yes. It came with 4 copies. I opened it up. It was a display box for $2.99. It's called Impossible Machines.
That's
right. I'm gonna try it.
Okay.
I have no idea what it is, but from looking at some of these, I feel like I'm in for a lot of disappointment. But it was it was $35 of disappointment, not like $150 of disappointment. So
you'll
know,
have to report back on how many of the 8 board games are bummer board games. So.
I can do that. Cool. I can do that.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. And hopefully you, I, and Rick, and Aaron, we can get the 4 of us on the show at one time. That would be scheduling.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be amazing to be able to schedule all that.
Yes.
So, Bob, you know, we always let the people know where they can find us. You can find Bob's writings and my writings and Rick and Aaron's. You can find them all at oneboardfamily.com. You can follow us on Twitter at One Board Family. Follow us on Instagram, over at YouTube, all of the social media accounts, Facebook at One Board Family. And we have some pretty cool stuff because October is my favorite month of the year because Halloween, man.
Yes,
I'm a big
Halloween.
Yeah, I'm a big Halloween fan. So what we're going to be doing is every Monday.
Every Monday, yep.
During the month of October, we are going to have a live stream for playing a Halloween board game. So we don't have a time yet, but if you follow us over at facebook.com/oneboardfamily, you'll be able to get the notification when we start live streaming. And we would love for you to comment and let us know what you think about the games we're playing. That'll do it, Bob. I will talk to you later. And until next time, we will see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.